Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is once again in session. Oddly, we are not drinking whiskey because we're actually recording on Sunday morning. So this is as close to a live show as we've ever done, I think.
Yeah.
So the Bills play the Browns today, and my day is going to go sideways shortly after this ends. So you're getting the best you can get from me today.
And I've had a little bit of a rough week.
You have had a rough week, so... today could go bad in a bunch of ways.
Any number of ways, yes.
But all right, so first of all, Donald Trump got booed at the UFC fight. And there was some controversy over whether he actually got booed
It started, he goes to the World Series game in Washington, right, where the Nationals played, gets booed.
Right. Blatantly.
It was clear, obvious. Okay. Then he goes to the UFC fight. Which was last Saturday.
Yep.
And I think it was, I think it was a mix. I think it was a mix of boos and cheers, and depending on where you were sitting, maybe you heard boos, maybe not.
So Joe Rogan, who commented on the fights, said on his podcast with Greg Fitzsimmons that he took his headset off to gauge it, and it was resounding boos. Yes.
Now, and Joe Rogan, so what's interesting is, Joe Rogan has a weird sort of, like, people, like your progressive thought leaders will say,
right,
have mixed feelings about Joe Rogan.
Sure.
Because some of the people he has on his show are very controversial.
Ted Nugent, Alex Jones.
Yes, and so...
Also Bernie Sanders, by the way.
Right, and so I think, you know, knowing... I don't know Joe Rogan, but I know... his thought process. He is one of those people who is, he's relatively thoughtful, can be objective, but has his own views. But he knows the platform that he has, and he wants to give, if you want to talk, then let's talk. Let's get it out there.
Yeah.
You know, Alex Jones, people say you're crazy. Prove them wrong. You know, Ted Nugent, people say you're crazy. Prove them wrong. Bernie Sanders, people say you're a Russian asset. Prove them wrong, whatever it might be. So he's just like, if you're worth talking to, he wants to talk to you. And the progressive left, like, feels that if you don't agree with them, then you shouldn't have a voice and you shouldn't talk. And so they beat Joe Rogan up. Oh, you gave Alex Jones a platform to spread his message and blah, blah, blah. Which, if you listen to that show... Alex Jones really wasn't spreading a message. He was literally telling us that he's a fucking clown. I mean, like...
Not in those words.
Not in those words, but I mean, like, I mean, he admitted that he's full of shit, essentially.
Sure.
You know, some of the other people he's had on the show that are considered far right wing, whatever, you know, Joe Rogan's had him on. He will challenge them. He'll call them on their bullshit, and he'll also try to get them high. So,
and he usually succeeds in the latter part.
Yes,
but you know, as a, it's well known that I am a huge Joe Rogan fanboy. The fact that he came out and said I took my headphones off and I heard booing,
yeah,
was telling to me.
Yes.
Now, yesterday, the president attended the LSU Alabama game. I'm very happy to say that we're talking about this after the game happened and that Alabama lost, because anytime Alabama loses, I'm happy. If that bothers you, fuck right off. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that.
Don't do that.
I now offended our one Alabama listening fan.
That game last night was fucking wild.
It was. And I, so.
Wait, LSU looks like they're about to blow the doors off of Alabama. 33-13. Alabama comes back. Alabama's within. And then Joe Burrow, who was third string at Ohio State, couldn't get on the field, leads them back very, you know, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger-esque. They score a touchdown. I'm looking at the game, sitting on your couch, this is this thing's over. And then Tua, I'm going to fuck up his last name, but the quarterback from Alabama throws a 70-yard bomb. And all of a sudden, like, Alabama's one onside kick away from possibly winning this game.
I would have lost my mind.
Yeah, well, it was like, and listen, the onside kick, the kicker actually did a really good job, but the guy from LSU went up, grabbed it, and secured the win for LSU. And I love the game because there were two running backs, both number 22, one from LSU, one from Alabama, and they came to play. And being a former running back, I love it when those guys ball out. And yes, it was Alabama. Yes, it was LSU. Yes, I hate the SEC. But I love to watch good guys play. And they, both those guys are going to play in the league.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And it was fun. So my experience was, like I said, the Bills play the Browns today. Buffalo has invaded Cleveland. I was downtown last night and the Southern Tier Brewery was 99% Buffalo people.
Well, it's such a short trip.
Yeah, roughly three hours.
It's a little under 3 hours. I mean, I went to Buffalo for
the UMass
National Hockey the National Championship game for the hockey thing. And it had been a while since I had been to Buffalo, but it's actually a relatively easy, direct trip.
Super easy. And, right up, straight up 90.
It's literally straight. And so it's a really easy trip.
Yep,
and so it makes sense that you know people would say, "Hey, we get to see our team play. It's not that far. Let's go."
And I mean, Buffalo fans travel regardless, but this is easy. Now it's kind of funny to me because Cleveland and Buffalo are very similar cities.
Yes,
in terms of you know food and ethnicity and
Manufacturing background, all that stuff, and being
heavy drinking cities.
Yeah,
and so I'm a little nervous about today. So this could be the final Whiskey Congress podcast if I don't survive me going downtown to watch the game today. Let's set up a code. If I text you Last Babylon or something, just get in your truck and drive down.
Yeah, probably a good idea for me to hop in an Uber in that situation.
That's a good point. Hey, Uber, take me to where my co-host is getting murdered.
Right.
So Trump goes to the Alabama-LSU game, and Alabama's student something or other issued a statement that anyone who is disruptive when the president appears will be removed from the game and lose the rest of their season tickets. I find this hilarious because so many people on the right and the left, I mean, it's comics, it's right and left commentators are talking about how college campuses are such wimps, college kids are such wimps, they can't take anything, they need a safe space, blah, blah, blah. They created a safe space for the fucking president. Period. They did.
And so yesterday I was trying to downplay that to a degree and say that Alabama was doing that because they didn't want to disrupt what was happening on the field.
Sure.
Because, listen, it's Tuscaloosa, Alabama. There is nothing else going on except for Alabama football, period. Nick Saban literally runs the state, right?
Right.
Like, Nick Saban could probably go to the governor of Alabama and say, change the speed limit from 25 to 50,
on campus.
Right. And they would be like, all right, Nick, this is a terrible idea, but sure. So... my initial argument, which I kind of knew was bullshit, was maybe they were doing it just to make sure they didn't screw with what was happening on the field. But the reality is they wanted to make sure that they showed that they are, MAGA strong and proud.
Right.
And they did. I mean, it was, standing, rousing applause. I mean, every conservative Trump supporter on Twitter last night retweeted it out. This is America. This is the real America. Not at a UFC fight, not at a baseball game in Washington, D.C., but, in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Right? I mean, okay.
Or as Joe Pesci called it in My Cousin Vinny, Ala-fucking-Bama.
Yeah. I mean, listen, that's Trump's demographic for sure. And I think, if we want to talk 2020 election briefly,
sure.
Trump, I have, and I still believe that Trump is on a path to re-election.
I know that. I know you think that, and I'm not ready to disagree with you, but I'm obviously.
But what I will say is what the data points are telling us is, you know, his base is made up of evangelical white people, you know, non-college educated
white people.
Labor work, you know, middle and lower class white people, and that base in and of itself is shrinking because you have more and more people moving to urban centers. You have more and more people moving to the Northeast and the East Coast and the Mid-Atlantic region. And those people have a different view of what they think America is. They're okay with diversity. They're okay with ideas like, you know, Medicare for all and helping other people. Right. I mean, that's kind of a big thing on the left, where on the right, it's everything is pull yourself up by your bootstraps, even though no one on the right actually wears boots and haven't pulled themselves up from shit.
And
right?
Trump inherited essentially everything that category is.
Yeah. So the thing is that his base is literally shrinking. Right. It's shrinking. It's like what we know for a fact is the people who voted for him, the number of the people who fit that demographic, that number has been reduced by about 2% and will maybe be 3% smaller by the time we go to the voting booth in November.
Almost exactly a year from now.
Right. So what he's doing is trying to get more from less, right? Like he's trying to really work up the Alabamas and the Louisianas and the Mississippis, right? Like, so the reason why this whole thing with him going to this Alabama-LSU game is critical is because there's a special election that's going to happen down in Louisiana. And so he wanted to get in front of the people who came to the LSU game or the Alabama-LSU game. He wanted to kind of show face there and, you know, be neutral party, yay, SEC, right?
Now, he also went to Kentucky in the lead up to the Alabama governor's election. And did you hear the endorsement he gave to the incumbent governor of Alabama? This guy's a jerk. Well, he didn't say jerk. He said, this guy is a real pain in the ass or whatever he said. He basically trashed the guy and then said, but that's what you want in a governor.
Vote for him. And he lost.
Lost. And he has yet to concede that he lost.
Well, I guess it's close, but I haven't seen a concession, and honestly, I'm not paying that close.
Because it's Kentucky, and who cares?
Right.
I care. Well, I'm being a dick to multiple southern states today. But the fact that he lost the election, was it Bashir? Mm-hmm. Something like that? And he's not conceding that he lost. Bill Maher has been on a tear with, when Trump loses in 2020, he will not relinquish the office, and he's citing this as a case. And a lot of the CNNs and MSNBCs are saying that Kentucky's governorship going blue is an indication of where the country's going. I don't buy any of that bullshit. I think the governor of Kentucky, from what I've heard, was despised. I mean,
yes.
You know, he was genuinely disliked. Trump shows up and gives a weird, I don't want to say lukewarm, because it was typical Trump passion, but a weird, again, finger-quoting, endorsement of this guy. And he loses in a very close race. I'm glad it happens. I mean, I'm glad it happened. I think, Kentucky is a state I have a beef with because I hate Mitch McConnell's guts. Mm-hmm. And having a governor that could now control, you know, what happens when things get reshuffled in that state in 2020 is a good thing, right? Because if a senator or a congressperson leaves, often the governor's in charge of handling how that replacement occurs.
And that's, you're not wrong there, but listen, Mitch McConnell runs Kentucky.
All right.
Period.
Okay. Like,
let's not dick
around
with
this. So Nick Saban runs Alabama.
Nick Saban and Mitch, you're right. I mean, it's the reality.
And you are not wrong.
And so this is, I mean, it's kind of a, if you're hoping for, you know, the Democratic nominee to, you know, beat Trump, this is a little bit of a sign that, you know, could be the canary in the coal mine.
Which Kentucky is a perfect.
That's why I said that, right?
Look at me knowing
things and whatnot.
But
I mean, but to me, like, so we've seen this, right? Like Virginia, the Virginia went blue,
right?
And you know, I mean, went blue across the board, right? I mean,
right.
And so we're seeing this, right? And there's been murmurings about Texas going blue, which it's kind of happening. I would say Texas is a purple state,
definitely. Although Austin is hardcore blue, and most of the rest of Texas is red as can be.
I don't think that's actually accurate. I think, you know, you're like, you've got Austin, you've got Dallas.
For... So the fact that Beto O'Rourke, who's a stooge, was able to give a run.
Right. I mean, well, and, but I mean, again, he was giving a run against Ted Cruz and it's fun to make fun of Ted Cruz.
It truly is.
But I honestly think the more I listen to Ted Cruz, the more I realize he's not the Dracula we make him out to be.
All right, I'm going to plug my ears and sing Mary Had a Little Lamb right now.
He's a dick, but I think that part of the problem is Trump, right? You look at Ted Cruz compared to Barack Obama, Ted Cruz is a devil. You look at Ted Cruz compared to Donald Trump, Ted Cruz not so fucking bad.
Okay.
And so, and I think even Ted Cruz recognizes that Trump is problematic, right? Like, he hasn't come out and supported him. He hasn't come out and really backed him. Like, he kind of gets on board with some of the, like, lower tier rhetoric, but he's not full charge ahead on a lot of these issues. Because as much as we hate Ted Cruz, like, he's a really sharp legal mind. Right, okay. Like, so I mean, he knows that Trump isn't and doesn't operate like he is, right? I mean, Trump has literally openly done multiple things that you can question. Are, you know, if this guy wasn't a president, would we be leveling charges against him? And Ted Cruz, I think, recognizes that. So I just want to throw that out there. But the state of Texas is a weird place in that. Like, Texas loves it some it, right? Like, Texas is Terrell Owens of the union.
Okay.
You know? I mean, like, they love them some them. Like, their history books are creative.
So you and I both went to kindergarten in Texas. I don't know if you know that I...
Yes.
So, and in kindergarten, I still remember it was, you're a Texan.
Right.
Not an American.
Not American.
And then they were never anti-American. I'm not saying that. But,
the Texan vibe
is very
Texas
real.
Is, right. Yes. But some of the stuff that they put in their history books, even and how they even talk about slavery in Texas is, I mean, to say it's not quite accurate is probably the best way to put it. Like, the way they talk, I mean, literally, the way they talk about slavery in Texas, you would think that a bunch of black people hopped on a boat from Africa, came over, decided that, you know, picking cotton was a productive
people.
Way to kind of, you know, build their status. And then, lo and behold, this damn civil war breaks out over we're not sure what. Northern aggression is a bitch.
And that's what, I mean, Texas became what it is because after the Civil War, a lot of Southerners fled the South because, you know, the North was coming in and the old carpetbagger thing or whatever. And they got to Texas to, quote unquote, be free. And there was a chance Texas was going to try to become an independent country at one point.
And there were also a lot of slaves that escaped Texas into Mexico, which is a story that has rarely been told. There's roughly 5,000 to 10,000 slaves that escaped Texas that went into Mexico and Mexico kind of embraced them. So I got into this one day because the whole thing with immigration, I've kind of been a little bit on the fence just because, like, honestly, part of me says, fuck these people coming in. Can we focus on the people that are here? And then you hear about the stories of people escaping into Mexico, like slaves and everything else. And that could be, I could have family members who did that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, my family, I can trace my family to Texas and Louisiana, right? And
right.
Then everything stops, right? I can't tell you anything else in terms of where they came from. Are they from the West Indies? Are they from Africa? I can't tell you anything about where my family comes from because the only information we have traces back to Texas and Louisiana, but I could have family that escaped into Mexico, you know, and so it makes me kind of rethink my thoughts on immigration. I haven't come off the stance completely. I think my stance is pretty legit. Like, we don't necessarily need a wall. You know, at one point in time, I was saying, fuck it, just build it so we can shut this guy the fuck up. But I do think, listen, let's throw in the necessary security measures. Let's give them the resources that they need. Let's figure out what we are considering to be asylum, and let's figure out the logistics of immigration, because it needs to be done. And I think that's a okay stance to have, right? All right. Like, I mean, you know, the idea of building a wall, I think there are certain places where we need to build a wall, so fucking do it, right? But
I've said the whole wall thing was dumb. I just think it's a dumb idea in terms of
The way it's presented by Donald Trump is that we're going to build a wall from fucking California all the way to fucking Florida, right? Like, I mean, and I don't think I'm not 100% sure he knows that we can't actually do that, right?
Right.
But I think there are certain places where there are bad shit happens at the border. Like, now listen, I'm going to say this, okay?
Uh-oh.
But Breitbart has a section. They have a vertical column by this guy, Brandon Darby. Brandon Darby has an interesting past, has worked with the FBI, but he reports on all things cartel border related. He lives on the Texas border. He sees it, and his reporting is probably one of your more objective things that you're going to see in media today. He openly acknowledges some of the issues with Breitbart. He's even put out there that there are stories, like he got fed information that wasn't accurate about certain people on the left, and Steve Bannon basically almost fired him because he wouldn't put it out. And he's openly talked about some of the toxic nature of some of the people at the top of Breitbart. But he still works for him because he's really good at his job. And when you look at the stories that he talks about of the shit that happens on the border, and he lives there, right? I mean, like, he, you know, he can, like, there's video, and then they've got reporters in Mexico that report the stories and report the things that are happening, and they have to do it anonymously under fake names and all this shit because the cartel will fucking come and kill them. We're all the whole thing with Jamal Khashoggi in Saudi Arabia, like, that was bad. That shit happens every fucking day down in Mexico. So that's, if you're interested in what the fuck is going on in the border in Texas, which, how the fuck did we get here? But that's a place to go. Now, be careful, because Breitbart is a scary place. They put out a lot of bullshit and a lot of propaganda and a lot of crap. They decided to go all in on Trump, although what's funny is that they were very critical of Trump in the beginning, but Steve Bannon recognized Trump's weakness was also his strength, so he took advantage of it, and now we're here. So, like, they're more powerful than I think anybody wants to give them credit for.
Well, we were talking about this having breakfast. The El Chapo's kid, they attempted to take him into custody, and literally
the cartel rained down hell on the Mexican state police so bad that the police had him. They had El Chapo's son, and the cartel rained down such a, like, fire just storm. A nightmare. Police were killed. Civilians were killed. Obviously guys in the cartel were killed. It was so bad that they said, okay, let's call a truce. You can have the guy back. Not worth it. We'll do something else.
Let's try to translate that into America, right?
You can't. Like, I mean, like, that, that's
literally like a. I don't even know.
What I mean, that's like a drug deal. That's like a drug dealer. Like, you know, pick a drug dealer in a city, Chicago, fucking one of the Crips or Bloods or something like that, and the gang just raining down hell on the police so bad that they let a guy go. Like, you know what? They came out and publicly said, fuck it, we're letting them go. Here, take them back.
And this would be the equivalent of, like, the National Guard. We're not even talking about local police force, right? This is like folks with military capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, yikes. It's scary down there.
You know, so it's funny. I have a friend who owns a condo in like a nice part of Mexico, and he gets really mad when people talk about Mexico being a war zone, because, like, you know, he'll point to statistics from Chicago, D.C., Detroit, whatever, and he's and statistically he's correct. And the truth is, it is confined to certain areas, but those areas are fucking crazy.
Well, I mean, like, Tijuana, and he's not your friend's like.
Statistically, he's,
well, he's not. He's not wrong, but he kind of is. In,
I mean, you were in Mexico.
I was. I was in Mexico in May, and it was great. And now the reality is, no one's trying to kidnap my black ass. Like I'm
the Chappelle joke. Right. Black people make terrible hostages.
Right. We're the worst hostages.
Three black. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. You still there? Like, no one's trying to kidnap me or anything like that. But I mean, Mexico was great for me. I mean, Cabo San Lucas is an amazing place. But at the same time, no, there isn't bad, but there are certain cities along the border where it is a war zone, right? And you know what? He's not wrong. There are certain parts of Chicago are very dangerous.
Yes.
Right? Certain parts of Cleveland are very dangerous, right? I mean, I got a buddy who works for one of the federal agencies, and, you know, he comes in and he tells me stories in the gym that are almost just as bad. You know, I mean, 15, 14-year-old kids stealing cars and driving cars through gun shops to raid and steal the guns in the gun shop, and then those guns turning up in, you know, multiple homicides across, you know, across the east side of Cleveland. So it's, you know, your friend's not wrong, but at the same time, like, let's not put on the rose-colored glasses. Listen, you live in Mexico. Where you live is really nice.
That's a resort for him. But
right, but the other port, you know, there are portions that are...
Juarez and Tijuana are the two that get pointed to the most, and...
Tijuana's not even... Like, Tijuana's a weird place, but...
For a variety of reasons.
In terms of the violence, like, Tijuana's probably not even on the charts with some of the other cities along the border.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
Have you ever been to Tijuana?
No. No. When I was working in Southern California, my uncle, who had been there multiple times, said that they used to go there, you know, in the 80s. That was a regular, like, family trip. Like, let's go to Tijuana for the day. We'll do whatever in Mexico. And he said he hasn't been there in 20 years because it's become just a nightmare. So.
No, I mean, it's
I know gross. What Tijuana's famous for.
It's gross. You know, it's gross, and it is sketchy. I mean, I went there and definitely
contributed to the sketchiness.
There was a situation, but, you know, it's. I still would argue that there are way worse places in Mexico. That,
there probably are. You know, at least Tijuana's near the ocean, so if you're going to get shot, at least have a beach view. All right, I want to kind of come at you on something, because you've talked about this in the past, and you've said in the past that you think Rudy Giuliani is going to be the scapegoat for the whole impeachment process and whatever. And I don't disagree with you, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on, will Rudy fall on his sword? Because right now he's all in, he's Trump's guy, whatever. But back to the Texas loves them some Texas, Rudy loves them some Rudy. And he has been a very powerful guy. I mean, his career is really interesting.
First of all, he's mayor of New York.
He's a mayor of New York, which is a very challenging job from a logistics perspective. He's a Republican mayor of New York, which is even more interesting. And he did a lot of things that I find disgusting in terms of just basically telling the police, do what you're going to do. I'm going to turn a blind eye to it, but let's make New York clean again. Having said that, when I was a kid growing up in New York State, New York City was a disaster. I mean, they said you couldn't walk down 42nd Street without choking on the smell of piss. And Rudy did get rid of, you know, he got rid of the squeegee guys. He did a lot of shit. That, Chris Rock's line was, he's like a pit bull that, you know, when you need to be protected, you want him there. When you don't, you're afraid he's going to eat your kids. And that's... legit. I mean, he did a lot of shit that I find on a, you know, 100,000 foot view level gross, but he turned New York City from an utter shithole into a place that people wanted to go to again. Now, having said that, if Trump and his team turn on Rudy and say this whole Ukraine thing is him and him alone, I don't think he'll fall on the sword. I think he will turn hard.
Well, my thing is, I think both these things can be true at the same time. I think you're right. I think he will fight it, but I don't think he's just going to be the patsy and just be like, oh, okay, yeah, I was totally doing this and blah, blah, blah. But I also think that they have put him in a position now where, and I think so what I think is happening is I think Rudy's starting to realize what I came to realize, right? And so Rudy came out and said, oh, by the way, everything I was doing in the Ukraine was on behalf of the president, who is Donald Trump, who is my client, right? Now, is that a defense, or is that him being on the offensive or him being defensive? We'll see. But I think that there is some significance to him saying that. And I think it's a little bit of a signal to Donald Trump, like, hey, if you throw me under, like, I am not going to go under alone. Like, right. you will be implicated.
Right.
So my whole thing is, I never said that Rudy would fall on the sword and just...
No, you didn't. You just said he would be the target.
Right, like, I think... I think that he now recognizes that. So he came out and made a really strong statement about everything he's done with the Ukraine has been on behalf of Donald Trump. And I think, again, that's him signaling... Be careful.
Don't do this.
Right. Be careful. And so we'll see, because I think that Trump's got an issue, right? I mean, Trump is so worried about this damn whistleblower, right? Like, he's completely oblivious to the fact that there are people literally who were on the phone, right? Like, now we have firsthand direct sources saying, listen, we were on the call. We made reports. Here are those reports saying, you know, hey, this isn't right. He is literally trying to, he's trying to you know, exploit a government and bribe and all this, like all the, you know, all the thing, like things that they actually say in the Constitution.
Right.
Right. Like, I mean, it does not look great for him. Now, will he be impeached? Yes. Will he be removed from office? I believe no.
I think you're right. Although I would have said 100%.
The GOP senators have no spine. They will not turn on him.
You know,
they don't, listen, they're not smart enough. I don't believe that any of them are smart enough to figure out how to do it. They're more worried about being reelected. They're more worried about their position. They're worried about what if the guy next to me doesn't vote for him and then I'm the only one? Trump's going to come after me. I can't survive that because I'm a pussy. So they're not going to turn on him. And that's male or female. I don't give a fuck about your gender issues. Like, you're a pussy. You can't do it, right? Like, you're soft and people are excited to get inside you. So fuck off.
What?
I don't believe that there's anyone on the right other than Mitt Romney, a.k.a. What was his Twitter name?
Oh, God. Pierre Delecto?
Yes. Yes.
Which I have no problem. That's awesome. I no criticism of that.
I don't think anybody's other than Mitt Romney. I don't think that there's anybody out there that's willing to. And Mitt, even if you had 20 Mitt Romneys, that's still not even close to enough. You know, I mean,
actually 20 would be, I think, the exact number.
That's the exact number. Shit. But even even if there were 10 Mitt Romneys, that's not enough. But you don't have that many.
Right? You know, I think you're. Logically speaking, I think you're correct. I will say that what really is annoying and bullshit about this is the Democrats in the House should not be impeaching him for political reasons. They should be doing it because it's their fucking job if they genuinely believe he violated his oath of office and is not upholding the Constitution. It shouldn't be a political calculation. It is. I'm not delusional.
Yeah, we're not delusional.
But... If they're doing their fucking job.
Here's the thing, and this is something that I don't hear anyone asking. Trump says he wanted Ukraine to investigate Hunter Biden's situation,
right,
and figure out if there was corruption. You know, that's his job. Okay. But the question I have that Trump can't answer and won't answer, but everyone should just think about is, if Joe Biden said, I'm just going to retire. I'm not running for president. I'm just going to go around and give speeches for $500,000
speak very badly while I'm doing it.
Eat some cheesesteaks from Philly and take pictures with people and go on the Today Show and talk shit with Al Roker. Would Trump have said anything to Zelensky about Ukraine? Would he even give a shit? Would he care? Right?
Yeah, that's...
And the answer, you know, the answer is fucking no.
Of course.
Right? We all know the answer is no. Now, there's no way to prove that because, you know, Biden didn't do that.
Right.
You can't, right? And that's kind of the beauty of Trump's whole defense. I was just trying to fight corruption.
Sure.
And this is a corrupt situation. I needed to know what is this guy, what is this Biden guy and his son, what are they up to? Right? That's how they're playing it. But we know it's bullshit, right? We know that he was worried about Biden being, you know, the person that he's going to face in the general election. So
he saw the polls saying that Biden would be
right. So he went out and said, look into Biden's son, see if you can dig something up on him so we can get him out of the mix.
This is another question.
He literally withheld military aid and money from the Ukraine. Hey, we're going to give this to you.
If
you do this. And you need to do it, and you need to do it this way, and you need to talk to these specific people. If you do, then you will get your money. If not, you will not get your money. That is the whole thing about bribery and extortion. Those are actual crimes.
And using the office of the presidency for political gain in doing those things is why he, in fact...
Personal gain.
Yeah. If that's true, he should be removed from office, period. Sorry, no, go hardcore lefty, whatever. But if Barack Obama had done that, I would say the same thing. I'm sure I'll get called, people will call bullshit on me, whatever. But if Barack Obama had used the presidency to, you know, dig up dirt on Mitt Romney, I would have said, you can't do that. You know, sorry, yeah. Barry, love you, but
People want to argue about Obama, like, oh, well, Obama spied on the Trump campaign. Like, but, listen, Trump surrounded himself with people who were literally considered enemies of the state, who, like, not Papadopoulos, but the other one, who they got the FISA warrant for, had already been investigated by the FBI 2 years prior, right? Like, this guy wasn't new to their radar. And
is that Mnuchin or
no? Oh my God!
Don't
I can't think of the guy's name, and I don't
want to
pause the show dead air and all that shit. But I mean, there are two specific people with Trump who triggered all of this with the whole thing with the Russians, and you know, is Trump a Russian asset, and do we need to figure it out, right? Because of what they were saying to other governments, their travel patterns, who they were interacting with, it was something that was worth looking into. And so, and if you're saying nuh-uh, then you're full of shit, right? There's like, you can't, like, these aren't, I'm not making it up, it's not fake news, these are actual things, right? The FBI literally investigated the one guy, I'm so annoyed that I can't fucking think of his name right now, but they were investigating this guy in 2012 and 2013.
Oh, by the way, we left out that Roger Stone is on trial now, and Bannon had to testify under subpoena against him.
Yeah.
Your boy Roger Stone.
God, Rod, that dude is fucking wild. talking about killing that other guy's dog, like, what the fuck?
He didn't say kill. He said, take it away.
He was going to take it away. Okay.
I'm now the defense attorney for Roger Stone. Who has a tattoo of Nixon on him, which is freaky for a wide variety of reasons.
Roger Stone is one of those guys who came to be just because he was a weird, quirky white guy who would say whatever you wanted him to say, right? And he, you know, I mean, starting back with Nixon and all the way through, and he's a political operative. And his shit finally has caught up with him.
I think he's going to prison.
I think he's going to prison as well. I mean, Steve Bannon testified against him.
Under subpoena. He didn't want to.
Okay, but he did.
He did, yeah. And he said stuff that's pretty damn...
That's damaging.
Incriminating, yes.
Now, the problem is, though, some of the things that he said, again, gets us back to why the FBI and the federal government were looking at Trump's campaign because of the people that he surrounded himself with.
Yes. By the way, I know this is completely, like, a sidetrack, but I cannot ever stop finding it hilarious that his neighbor was Chad Ochocinco, who filmed the FBI raid on his house. That is, the idea of Chad Ochocinco and Roger Stone being next door neighbors is so hilarious to
right.
me.
Like, that I just what can't. The fuck are those pool parties like?
Hey, neighbor, we're going to barbecue.
Like, for some reason, I picture Chad Ochocinco, aka Chad Johnson, in like a leopard print robe. Like going out, like
and Roger Stone going out in a leopard robe,
like going out to get his mail, and Roger Stone being in like a pink leopard print robe, and then the FBI and SWAT coming in, and Chad, and you know Chad Ochocinco, like, oh, what is this?
They're not here for me.
What? Like, well, why would they be? I mean, Chad Ochocinco wasn't a bad guy. He never did anything legally. Like, he was right. just quirky, weird guy
who
got cool touchdown dances.
Hey, cool touchdown dances and. Was about to get an MTV show when he got caught with a condom and his fiance took exception.
I think it all went to shit because I think he headbutted her.
Right. She got
like they got into an argument. Okay. I mean, he was he liked to fuck
so
around.
So if he would have headbutted Roger Stone, this would be a perfect perfect story.
Yeah.
All right, I derailed that. I'm sorry, but that's just hilarious to me that those two people are neighbors.
Were neighbors.
I don't know who's where anymore. All right, we're both Ohio State fans. Funny story. So I caught up with you after the Ohio State game yesterday. And I thought the game ended 52-7. It was like 42-0 at the half, and I thought the game ended at 52-7. And I came to you. And I'm like, hey man, I'm glad to see Ohio State called out the dogs. And you looked at me like. What the fuck are you talking about? Because they rolled up three more touchdowns, or 73 points. So, fake news, or not fake news, lack of knowledge on my part led to a really dumb statement.
Listen, Ohio State is very good, and they're one of the top three teams in the country. I think LSU is going to get put at the number one spot in the college football poll that'll come out probably
right now.
Tonight, or later today. And listen, I mean, LSU has beaten four top 10 ranked teams this season, so they deserve it. Ohio State was number one this week, but they played Maryland this week and beat them by 50 points or whatever.
Yeah. 73-14?
Yeah. Like,
59 points?
That's also the second time Ohio State's gone over 70, and the last time they went over 70, they actually I think they got to 80.
Okay.
They beat Miami of Ohio by, like, 70 points. It was absurd. So Ohio State is really good. They are one of the best teams in the country, but they also have like two, if not three, of some of the top 10 players in the country. One of those players being Chase Young, who is the defensive end. And, I mean, the dude is just...
he's a monster.
He's a freak. I mean, you know, he's...
Man, Ohio State has put out some ridiculous defensive ends in the last 5 years. Two Boses.
Both the Boses, and I think this Chase Young kid may be better than the Boses.
Which is a bold statement.
Which is a bold statement, because Nick Bosa is just... like, Joey Bosa was the first, and he's really good, and Nick Bosa is that much better, and Chase Young may be that much better than Nick Bosa. Both Joey and Nick Bosa are really doing really well in the NFL. So, Chase Young is he's a really dynamic athlete. He's a disruptor. He's a game changer. And Ohio State didn't miss him yesterday, but you saw how good the other guys are. But you'd never get to see that when Chase Young is on the field, because he's there before everybody else.
So, I was at an Ohio State party yesterday. Like I said, I mentioned before the show that I was hanging out with a guy wearing a MAGA hat, and it was a really cool hat. I'm not going to lie. It had, like, weird embroidering and whatever. Cool hat, but anyway. And I'm in a very pro-Ohio State crowd, and they were like, he did nothing wrong. He took money so his girlfriend could come to see a bowl game, and if they just given the money directly to her, this wouldn't be an issue. And I, frankly, don't know the truth of that or not.
Well, so it's a weird story because, all right, according to Chase Young, he met this guy, and what I have issue is with the timeline. I don't know if we have a good picture of the timeline. He said he met a family friend, air quotes, prior to the summer prior to his freshman year.
Okay.
So, and he borrowed money from this family friend that he met the summer prior to his freshman year, and borrowed money allegedly to get his girlfriend to the Rose Bowl. So the question is, when did he get the money from the family friend? And
your inflection was perfect for air quotes, by the way.
Right. And like, so when, my big question is, when did the exchange of funds happen? And just to kind of clear it up, because as he's telling it, it doesn't make sense. If you met this guy the summer before your freshman year and he gave you X amount of dollars at that point in time, were you, you weren't even at Ohio State yet. Not qualified for the Rose Bowl. You had no idea where you were going. So, would you say, well, in case we make it to the Rose Bowl, can I have $5,000 to get her to this game? That doesn't quite add up. So the question is, when did this family friend that he met that summer give him the money? And then once I know that, then it doesn't necessarily change much. I think that this is kind of bullshit. Now, the problem is that it's the rule, right? Like, so you got to know the rules. Don't break the rules, even if the rules are stupid. But in light of where the NCAA has come in and said, you can accept money for XYZ, I think that for them to come back and try to claw back at him aggressively here just shows their hypocrisy to a degree. The other aspect is that allegedly he paid the money back.
Right.
So dude took a loan and then paid it back. So what are we punishing him for? Right? Like it's one thing if he just was given money, but if he turned around and he paid it back, then so I guess the other question is, well, how did he pay it back?
Right.
And who knows?
We got buddies from another family friend,
dude. Right? Well, I mean,
but I don't know his background.
I mean, his dad could
be a doctor for all I know.
I don't know either. And so, which could very well be the case, right? I mean, his dad could say, wait, you took money from who to do what? No, you're paying that shit back. Here it is. Don't ever do that again. And so I don't think, my thing is, if that's the case, he borrowed money and then paid it back, then I really have an issue with if the NCAA really goes at him hard. He's already missed a game. The max I'd be willing to accept is 2 games, so he can miss Maryland and Rutgers now. and I'm not kidding. I get the timing, whatever. The
That was the thing that was going on at the party yesterday was, we got voted number one, meaning Ohio State voted, or not voted, but ranked number one in the college playoff.
And all of a sudden,
Chase Young is getting scrutinized by a guy from Maryland, is what they were saying. Again, I don't know the truth of that or not.
And so we shall see. But I do have serious issue if the NCAA comes down and says, well, you're gonna miss the rest of the season,
which means the rest of his career, right? Right. He's going pro.
Yes, he has to go pro.
Will he be the number one overall pick? Unless there's a quarterback. Will he be the first non-quarterback drafted? I think the answer is yes.
He will definitely be the first non-quarterback drafted. Will he be the overall number one pick?
Depends who ends up at number one.
Right. It depends on who's at number one.
If they have a quarterback they think they can live with. I mean, this could be just like when the Browns drafted Myles Garrett. You know, the Browns needed a quarterback, but Myles Garrett was someone you just couldn't pass on. I think Chase Young is a guy you cannot pass on.
And obviously the season hasn't gone the way the Browns wanted it to. So, I mean, let's just say the Browns don't win another game, they're going to win.
I'm afraid they're going to win today. So I'm about to head downtown to watch the Bills and the Browns. And the Browns are 2-6 against a 6-2 Buffalo team, and the Browns are favored.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times a 2-6 team has been favored over a 6-2 team.
Yes.
Having said that, I get it.
From a talent standpoint,
the Browns are a better team, period. Other than the offensive line and the defensive backfield, the Browns are a better team. And skill position-wise, it's not even close. So I'm very nervous about the game. Having said that, I also want to go downtown, meet with my Buffalo Bills backers Cleveland chapter friends at the map room, and this will oddly be posted before I get there. So that's the first time for our show doing that. Also, first time that not a drop of whiskey has been consumed.
Right. Good fun. Look at us.
Look at us. Yes. Look at us not getting drunk at 11 in the morning on a Sunday. you ready to wrap this up, man? Is there, if you got a closing thought or something else you want to talk about? I'm game. I just
No, I mean I do want to say this publicly. I have had a very tough week.
Yes, you have.
And going through a couple things, which I won't go right into detail on the air, but you have been a very good friend and very supportive, and I appreciate it. I am very fortunate that I have the friends and family that I do, who accept me for who and, you know, what I am and have strong belief in me. And, you know, you're definitely on the top of the food chain there. So I appreciate you, everything you've done, you know, and probably will do. And just, I wanted to publicly thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. I would obviously not have aired that on my own, but I appreciate you saying that. I love you, man. And we're going to, you know, get through this shit and keep it going.
All right.
But well, I appreciate you saying that. We'll soldier on.
So go Bills.
Thank you.
My Steelers are slowly kind of bouncing back. So I need the Bills to keep the Browns down at bay this week. So I will be watching and rooting, so don't fuck it up.
Hell of a pep talk. All right. We're at Whiskey Congress on social media. Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com. Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com. If you want to email us, thanks for listening. And sorry for being sober, but not really.